Hey, this is Michelle, and you're listening to Words with Michelle, the podcast, a show where I sit down and have conversations with influencers on a range of topics, anything from natural hair, employment, discrimination, food, relationships, and everything in between. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. If you want to send me an email, hit me up at michelle@wordsmichelle.com. Thanks for tuning into the latest episode of Words with Michelle, the podcast. Hey, y'all, it's me, it's your girl, and I'm bringing back one of my most inspiring episodes. In this re-release, I chat with travel writer and journalist Heather Greenwood Davis, a woman who did what so many of us dream of. Over 10 years ago, she packed up everything, grabbed her husband and two young boys, and set off on a year-long around-the-world adventure. But before we dig deeper, I want to let you know that this episode is sponsored by my book, Words with Michelle, Inspirational Conversations with Today's Black Canadian Changemakers. Words with Michelle is a collection of inspirational interviews with Black Canadian changemakers who are local. Yes, I'm talking the GTA. Some of the changemakers are community builders, disruptors, and quiet trailblazers. So my book is available now on Amazon and Indigo. Every purchase supports the amplification of Black Canadian stories. Now back to the show. In this episode, Heather speaks about becoming a travel writer, that big trip, and how it has impacted her family. So whether you're dreaming of travel, feeling stuck in routine, or just need a reminder that bold moves are possible, this episode is for you. So hit play and let's revisit this timeless conversation. I start off the show asking Heather to introduce herself. Thanks for being on the show, Heather.
Heather Greenwood Davis. I'm based in Toronto. I have been writing travel since 2002. I write for magazines and newspapers in Canada and the US primarily. I also do some television. So I'm on two shows in Canada, and I've been invited as a guest on a number of shows in the US. I'm a travel journalist and love it.
So I realized you were a lawyer before you started traveling.
That's true.
How did you get the switch?
Well, the switch actually starts before that. So I went to journalism school, and I actually worked at the Toronto Star for a little while. And it was while I was at the Star that I had a friend who was trying to write the LSAT for law school. And I was helping her study. And so together we studied for the LSAT. And then on a bit of a whim, it was like, I studied. I wonder how I would do. And that led to a chain of events that ended up with me in law school and then practicing as a lawyer for a few years. But the dream always, since I was a little kid, was to be a writer. In fact, it was to be a writer at the Toronto Star. So I didn't run off to law school happily, because I was like, it was a bit of a lark and I'm happy where I am. But in retrospect, I am glad that I went. I have never regretted the education. And once, you know, by 2007, I left the law and moved it back into the journalism field. And, you know, just to back up, I'm telling this story really poorly, but in 2002, I had my first son. So I have two boys. I'm a mom. I've got two boys. And the child who was born in 2002 really launched the travel part of my career. So although I had been a journalist, I'd never been a travel writer. Okay. And when I was pregnant with him, I came across an advertisement for a spa in Texas that catered to pregnant women, and thought, as every pregnant woman does, I too would like to be rubbed down, you know, several times a day during this pregnancy. How do I get in on this? But I thought it was a great news story. I told the travel editor at the Star, he agreed. I told the spa in Texas, they thought it was a great idea to get the publicity. And so off I went as this, you know, pregnant woman to this like $10,000 a day spa, to report on how great it feels to be massaged and, pampered as a pregnant lady. And that story in 2002, led to me having a column in the Toronto Star, which I maintained while I was doing the law practice between 2002 and 2007. So by 2007, when I left the law, I already had started a career as a travel writer. So just so you understand, it wasn't sort of...
Oh, okay, I see.
there was nothing abrupt really throughout it. I mean, except the decision making, right? That at some point you're like, I hate this and I want to do something else. Yeah.
That's awesome. Being an employment counselor, I used to be an employment counselor. This is like, we hear this all the time. There's always a switch. There's no career is just the same. There's always a switch up. So this makes complete sense to me. So we realized you always wanted to write as a child. Yeah. And so traveling and writing just was a marriage made in heaven then.
It was. I my family traveled. So my parents both immigrated from Jamaica in the early 70s. I was born here and my mom was really keen. My dad too, but my mom especially was really keen on making sure that myself and my brothers knew our country. Like she was like, you were born here. This is your country. We are now Canadian citizens. We need to know this country. And so she used best efforts to try to get us to spots across Canada. We didn't get that far, but we did visit a few provinces. And I think that did speak to part of my interest in pursuing travel, but also, you know, like most immigrant families, we traveled to see family. So we went back to Jamaica. We went to see family across the United States. You know, I have very fond memories of being in the back of a van with all of my cousins on some big mattress, you know, no seatbelts, no, you know, bumping along to visit more cousins in the States. And all of those things, family, travel, fun, you know, sort of united in this, I always enjoy traveling, but at some point put it together and was like, hey, I also love writing. I could do these things together.
Great. So that kind of brings up the topic of the show, like traveling with and without kids. So yeah. How important for kids to travel and to see the world? How important is it?
I think, so I should tell you that I had my first son in 2002. He started the whole thing. Then my second son came along in 2004 and we kept going. And then in 2007, when I left the law, almost, you know, within a few days of leaving, my husband came home and said that he had an opportunity at work to do a 4-over-5. So it was basically a prepaid sabbatical where for 4 years, they withhold 20% of your pay. And in the fifth year, you get all of that 80% back, but you don't have to come into work.
Yeah.
And he and I had always talked about, you know, that we wanted to see the world and wouldn't it be cool to like take off for a year? And suddenly here was this opportunity where we could plan to do that, but we had these two little kids with us and, you know, could we do it with the kids? And of course the answer was yes, you can do anything you want. They're yours. and so we made a plan to do that. So in 2011, we left Toronto. The kids were 6 and 8. We did a year long trip around the world. We hit 29 countries on 6 continents over the course of 12 months. We came back and they missed grade 2 and grade 4. Mm-hmm. And they just came back and went into grade 3 and grade 5. I may have messed that up, but I think that's right. So they didn't lose any time at school. We did not homeschool them, while we were away. We just,
how did they adjust the world? So they were able to go back into school and like function and understand everything.
Yes. Wow. And I would add that they brought back to school a lot of information and learning that I think benefited the other kids and the teachers. So I'm a big, big advocate for taking the kids out of school. I'm a big advocate for travel, whether it's, you know, you can only afford to go, you know, on a camping trip next door or a day trip out to see the city near you, or you can do something sort of that grandiose. And believe me, we did it on a very tight budget and we picked where we were going according to what we could afford. So it's not that we didn't live in the lap of luxury for this entire trip, but it was amazing. What it exposed them to and what I think particularly for Black children, I think, or kids who are coming from immigrant families or people of color, however you want to term it. I think what's really important is beneficial for all kids, but particularly for kids who feel like minorities in their communities, is that it pulls you out of what you think is the only way things can be, and puts you in situations where you can broaden that idea. So for my kids, you know, the example I always share is that my youngest, Cameron, you know, he came home from school just before we left. And he, so this is grade two, grade one, he had finished, missed grade two. And he was saying, you know, the kids at school, somebody's not my friend and somebody's not talking to me and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that we're leaving and gonna miss this for a year of like, who cares what these kids at school think about you? But at that age, you care, right? Yeah. And we took him away. He had this phenomenal year where he really grew. He was a shy kid. He came out of his shell. It was just amazing. And we came back and he went back into school that September. And I kid you not, the first week that he came home from school, he's like, somebody at school said to me, you know, they're not my friend anymore and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, all that travel for nothing. And I said, so what did you say to them? And he says, I told them I've got friends in France.
Wow. Mic drop. Wow. Are you serious?
And to me,
amazing.
Yeah. But to me, it speaks to how, you know, we all do it. I don't know if you've ever gone back to your public school and you're like, huh, when did they lower all the racks? And like, how come the shoes are so small? And like, when you're in something, it seems larger than life, right? When it is where you are, yeah. You know, what the older kids at school say matters, you know, who's your friend in your class matters. When you broaden that, you're able to see how small those environments are. Oh, that's just one neighborhood in one city, in one country, on the planet. Like suddenly there's a different perspective that you take. And even as a kid, you grasp that. And I can tell you, both my kids, they're now both in university in Ottawa. You know, Cam in particular has gone on to, he's given a TED talk and he speaks to groups and he's, you know, working in environments where he's talking to youth and all of these kinds of things. And I'm telling you, all of it, I trace back to taking these kids out of an environment that tried to tell them who they were and giving them an opportunity to define for themselves what they like, you know, what they look for in people, what's normal. All of those things were redefined just because we were traveling.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I know you said you went to 26 places, but where did you take, because they were young children when you were traveling with them. Where did you take them?
My theory is always like anywhere that has kids, you can bring kids, right? Like yeah. They feed their kids, they clothe their kids, they make sure their kids are safe as best they can. Mm-hmm. You can bring kids. You're going to take the same precautions that you would take at home. I do not take my kids down dark alleys at 2 a.m. in Toronto. I'm not going to do it when we're in India or anywhere else, right? But honestly, we started off across Canada. I never get this right, but we started off across Canada. We headed west. We jumped into a few provinces along the way because it was important to me too, that as much as we were going out to see the world, I wanted them to also see it in the context of the country that they live in and that they are citizens of. So we went out across Canada. Then our first stop was into South America. So I know we landed in Argentina, and then we sort of made our way up and eventually flew out of Colombia into China. We spent 30 days in China, which I would say were probably the hardest 30 days of the trip, mostly because language, you know, no amount of French helps you in China. And culturally, I found it different in the sense that, I mean, all the cultures are different, but my natural instinct about how things worked were flipped in China. And so that was a really great place for us to learn about how we sort of think of certain things as normal here at home, right? The way you line up for a bus, this is the normal way. And we equate normal with correct, right? There's only one way to do that. Everybody stands in a line, waits till the door is opened, files in single file. And in China, they have other ways of doing that. And it's normal to the people who are there. So it was just one place where over and over again, it was tiring because you actually had to stop and think, you know, oh, I don't like the way they did that. And then you stop and think and like, wait a minute, but here, this is normal.
Yeah.
And so I'm in the wrong in this situation and I need to figure out how to be a part of what's happening here. And I think I'm so grateful for the lessons I got out of that part of the trip. From China, we went into Australia, New Zealand. We came out of there into Southeast Asia. So it was like Cambodia, Vietnam, and Malaysia. And then we went to Thailand, I think. And then we went over to Africa and we did South Africa, Namibia, Kenya, Tanzania. Out of Africa, we wanted to go to Egypt, but this was the Arab Spring. So we were, there was a lot of turmoil in Egypt and we were sort of waiting for the time to go. So we left Africa, went through the Middle East and into like Jordan and into Dubai and into India, spent 6 weeks in India and then came back and did Egypt. And then from Egypt, yeah, I've messed it up, but from Egypt, we went somewhere. And then eventually we found our way into England before finding our way home. So we didn't spend a lot of time in Europe. We didn't spend any time in the Caribbean or America, because those were all places that were fairly easy to get to from Toronto. Yeah. Even, and as a travel writer who then had very young kids, you know, I couldn't just go to Australia for a week or whatever it would take, right? Yeah. So we tried to go to the places that were furthest away, thinking both in terms of like, what did we want for the family and the experience, but also professionally for my career, what kind of places, what stories could I gather in places that would be harder to get to over the next few years? Yeah.
How on earth did you plan this? Like, did you like think of this? Like, because that's a lot. Like when you told me, it's like, I'm just thinking, how do you get kids, like your family to do everything to be okay with it? And then I guess to be not okay with it, but how did you formulate this plan?
No, you don't overthink it. So the first thing was, what do we want to do and why do we want to do it? And is this something we really want to do and want to make happen? Yeah. And then what we did with the kids was, before we even told them that we were leaving, because we didn't tell them we were going to do this, you know, we had 4 years to think about it. We told them like maybe 6 weeks before we were going, you know, like, I don't know. Do you have kids?
I don't have kids. I don't have kids.
Okay. If you've ever been around a child of that age, you give them information and there is going to be a question a day at least until you go. I'm like, I can't do 4 years of, is it tomorrow? No.
That's true. I get it. Okay. True. No. I'm not a mom. That's true. I guess you're right. That's true.
You're right. So I was like, no. So they didn't know until it was almost time to go. And I actually remember saying to them, you know, gathering them and being very excited to finally tell them. And like, you guys, okay, so when school finishes this year, guess what? We're going on this big, big adventure. And we're going to be, where are we going? Well, we're going everywhere. We're going all around the world. And I remember the younger one going like, oh, what's wrong? And he's like, oh, Joey's family's going to Disney World. And I was like, you don't get it. It's we're just gonna go forward and hope that you grasp this at some point. But I remember, like, they don't know, right? Yeah. So, but in terms of preparing them, what we did do, and we started this long before they knew we were leaving, is we put up a huge post-it note, like those giant poster size post-it notes, on the wall of what was then their playroom, and said, you know, you can write anything on here, you can draw anything on here of things around the world that are interesting that you would be interested in seeing one day, and blah, blah, blah. And so we had this list, I'm sure I've still got it somewhere, but we have this list of like, you know, that ranged from like, I want to touch a pyramid to I want to swim with sharks. I want to jump out of a plane. I want to eat ice cream for breakfast was another one.
Me too. I'm with that person. I'm with your child. I mean,
so there are some that we co-signed on right away. Ice cream for breakfast. I'm down for that. And there were others that we were like, you're not jumping out of a plane, right? but we let them do it. And it was a great exercise for them and for us, because we were also writing like, what do we want to do or where would we want to go? Mm-hmm. And then at some point I pulled all of those things together and sort of tried to figure out, you know, there are things like the ice cream that can happen anywhere, but then there are things that, you know, you can only touch the pyramids where the pyramids are, right? So that you've got to actually plan for. So that helped us figure out sort of what countries were key, plus any countries that we thought we really wanted to hit. And we made the decisions about what countries we didn't want to go to in terms of the States and Caribbean, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then I was completely overwhelmed. And then I connected with a travel advisor from Flight Center who happened to be an around the world specialist. and who was really excited about the fact that we were doing this as a family. And he took my list of things because I showed him what I sort of worked out. And so he helped us figure out what a good route would be. And also keeping in mind that we didn't want to, for example, we wanted to go to Russia at that point. Mm-hmm. This is, of course, pre-current day Russia. Mm-hmm. But it was going to be so far off the beaten path of where we were going everywhere else that it would be really expensive to get to. It was going to take a lot of time. So he was able to say to us, it's unless you really want to give up a lot of your time, you better let this one go, that kind of thing. Oh, and okay. So we whittled it down to a list of what we wanted to do, of where we wanted to go. He had the list. We had the list. We got tickets. We bought our own tickets. Sometimes he helped us get tickets. He would say to us, you know, you had said that you wanted to go to India next. You're going to need a visa for India. Here's where in the country you're in before India, here's where you go about get the visa. So it was great to have someone with sort of a bigger view while we were sort of enmeshed in the day-to-day of how to make it work. And he was also great for things like, you know, we would say, okay, we're going to go to Thailand for 5 days. And then we'd get to Thailand and be like, oh, it's the Loy Krathong Festival, which is the, when they light all the, what do you call them? Like the floating candles, and they light the ones that float up to the sky. And it's like, I think it's Tangled. It's the Disney movie that it's got them all in there. Oh. Anyway. Mm-hmm. And that was happening while we were there. And it was scheduled to happen the day after we were leaving. And so having a travel advisor I could call on also mm-hmm. meant that I could say to him, hey, we just found out that the festival's in 2 days. We want to stay here for another 3 days. What does that mean for our flights for the next thing? Or, you know, should we just take the bus this time? Or, you know, so he was a really great logistics person. But when we went to India, we were in Mombasa in Kenya, and we bumped into an Indian family who lives in Britain, but, you know, the mom had immigrated from India. We went to dinner. She planned out a 6-week itinerary for me and connected me with her friends in India. We had the best time in India. I could have never planned that because, of course, I don't know India, yeah. right? Like, I'd have been relying on guidebooks and secondhand information. And then we went and visited that family in England when we got to London. You know, we met a French family in Spain, and then we went to visit them in France. And they, you know, we met another, it just, people will help you along the way. So we didn't have to know day to day to day what we were doing. Okay. We just had to have a general overview of what we wanted in a place and conversations between the four of us, which I think, you know, parents don't always do. About how you were feeling at any given time, or do you want to do something today? We're not going to do anything. We were steps from the Eiffel Tower. I remember one night we could see it, and we were like, nah, like nobody wanted to do that. What do you want to do today? Really? Yeah.
Were you tired or just not interested? Like at that point, were you just,
no, tired? It's like, there's a difference between traveling for vacation mm-hmm. and traveling as your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And so cannot keep the amount of energy that you take. I mean, how many times do you go on vacation, come home exhausted, right? Because you go out there with this, like, we're going to do everything and we're going to, and you cannot maintain that for a year. At some point, you need to come home. So we had days when, you know, we didn't homeschool, but they had notebooks where they could journal. They had to do some math. Whenever we had downtime, they did math online. And they could also look up historical things as we were going, if on the same mm-hmm. site.
Okay.
If I remember it, I'll send you the name.
So a lot of education happening. I mean, like, even though they're living their education, right? Like, I mean, like you said, like, they're looking at historical, like, architecture or whatever, and they can just go online and check it out. Wow, that's, oh my
God. But not just that, but you're in places, like, we forget that, for example, when we went to the pyramids, we're with an Egyptologist, right? Your guide is educated in the pyramids and in hieroglyphics. And, you know, he's able to tell you all of those things. And you've got, especially kids who are, you know, naturally inquisitive, you know, they're going to lead themselves to learn things. They were reading all the signs and asking questions. I'm like, there's at no time in the rest of their education have they had an Egyptologist teach them about Egypt, you know?
Yeah.
And even things like, you know, we were in Jordan and we saw people wearing like hijabs or burqas, right? Completely covered or what have you. And I remember saying to my husband, like, okay, we should, you know, think about, you know, we make sure we tell them, like, you know, this is what people dress like here, whatever. They told us first, right? Because as kids, I'm like, hey, what do you think of Jordan? They're like, it's cool. They go, I like that people here dress a certain way and carry themselves in a certain way. We were in Peru once and they were like, I love that these kids, you know, none of them have sneakers, but it's not stopping them from going out and playing soccer. You know, can we take off our shoes and join them in the game? Yeah. You know, like they just didn't assign as kids, they didn't assign good or bad to, you know, there was no judgment of situations we came into. It was just the situation where we were. And you have to remember, you know, in a lot of the places we went, I remember in Thailand is a good example. And in India too, where we saw people who were crippled or blind or whatever it may be, mentally ill, whatever it may be, there's no attempts to, you know, blind people aren't all wearing dark glasses, maimed people don't all have prosthetic limbs, right? Like it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And for kids, it can be a little jarring because that's not what you're used to at home. But if you've opened up a pathway for them to ask you questions about it and you can be fairly open and honest in how you respond, they take it in as, you know, oh, it's just information. And now I know, you know, some places people cover these things, some places they don't. Places people fully cover their faces and some places they don't. And I think what it's really done for both of them is open them up to accepting people and interacting with people now that they're home and, you know, away at school or traveling with their friends or whatever it may be, in ways that not all people are able to do because they haven't had that exposure. It's just exposure.
How long did you travel as a family for? Like, I know that big trip was that first year. Like, did you guys still travel together or did?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, right now I got in trouble the other day because my youngest is home for the summer from university. And he pointed out to me, he's like, we haven't gone anywhere together.
Oh, so I think he said it's going to be
a year and a bit. But it's because, of course, you know, there's this idea, I call it the myth of 18 summers, which is once you have a child, you only have 18 summers with them and you have to make the most of those 18 summers because you're never going to have them again. And I'm like, it's baloney. Like if you create and foster an environment where as a family, you want to be together and you enjoy time together, it's going to shift. I've got kids who are working or, you know, have school obligations that are different from taking them out of school in grade two, right? Like university is a whole different kettle of fish.
You're the best mom ever. I wish my mom did that to me back then. I hated school.
I'm going to tell them you said, by the way, today I was named the best mom ever.
Oh my God, I would love that.
Yeah, but you know, anyway, I think it's a really important thing to have done. And I think it's really important that parents understand that you can build relationships that go beyond those 18 summers. So yes, we travel together when we can. And they're always up for the travel. It's just that life sometimes won't allow them to do it.
What was your most memorable moment from any of your trips with your kids? Your family.
I have so many. I don't think I can point to one. Of course, that year is standout. Everything about that year and having that kind of time. What parent gets 24/7 with their kids? What parent realizes that they might want 24/7 with their kids? You know, we're always sort of dividing our time with with teachers and, you know, other kids, friends or whatever. And I had these guys to myself. I could shape and instill the values that I wanted them to have for a full year where we were their points of information and build a relationship with them that stands, where they still will come to us, you know, with questions about life or what have you. We're a very close family. So that whole year is important to me. But over the years, I also traveled individually with them. I made sure to take them places where it was just myself and one of them, or maybe I'd bring my mom or whatever it would be. But and I think that's important too, because it allowed them to grow into individuals and to have individual experiences. In terms of traveling without the kids, all the time. All the time. And starting from when they were quite young. And I'll say this, for me, travel is a job. So I never made any apology for having to commute to work. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried when they were younger not to extend my time. Like I said, I couldn't do the Australia trips. I tried to do shorter 4-day type of stints, but they have a father who lives in their home who is a perfectly capable caregiver. Mm. So they were not left alone. And I was really lucky. My parents continued to live very close to us and developed a strong bond early. I always say I have never left a crying child because we set up a situation where these kids still feel very much at home, whether they are with us or with their grandparents or one parent is home or what have you. So I think you do yourself a disservice, you know, even as somebody who is not a professional travel writer, if you're traveling, if you are denying yourself opportunities to grow, which is basically what travel is, opportunities to be exposed to the world, to learn things, and remembering that your job as a parent or part of your job as a parent is to be the best possible person you can be, get the most information you can to help your offspring better navigate the planet, you're doing yourself a disservice if you're locking yourself off from that. And I think particularly as women and mothers, we have been sort of conditioned and told by society that you're supposed to, there's a certain way to be a mother. And that requires you to, you know, be full on all the time with your children. And I can tell you, it doesn't have to be that way. Some people will choose that and that's completely fine. But if for you, as it was for me, it was really important to hold on the parts of myself that I value and like. I like being with myself and I like being with myself in the world and meeting people and having new adventures and bringing those home. That's perfectly okay too.
You're creating a world for your children. They can be there on their own for a bit.
Yeah.
And I like the fact you said that you never left a crying child. They understood.
Yeah.
They understood
this. Mommy's going to work. Because, and the biggest problem for them was not them, it's other people, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was also about equipping them for, like, you know, the well-intentioned neighbor or the teacher at school is like, oh, are you okay? Because your mom's left again, or your mom's whatever. And making sure that they felt, they understood that the choice was not to leave them or not leave them. The choice was to either go to work or to do something that mom needed to do for herself, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think as once they grasped that, it made it a lot easier for them to navigate other people's expectations at schools. But I mean, we did that too with, I remember they, totally off topic, but they, somebody used to ask them, what do they want to be when they grow up or what have you? I'm like, what kid needs that pressure? Like you're eight. I don't know. How do you know what you want to be?
Hold on. I'm glad that you said that. That's true. As a child, you do feel pressure to answer that. I mean, like, okay, I haven't been a kid in like 100 years, but that's true. That's so unrealistic to ask anyone because we constantly change as adults. Like, you know what? I mean, like I started out, like I told you, I was an employment counselor. I did all these different jobs in my life so far, and I'm going to do different jobs in my life. That's true.
The nature of it now is that it's so unlikely that you're just going to have one job. And I'm like, why are you trying to sort of, because what then happens is the child says, I want to be a garbage collector. And the reaction is, oh, or I want to be a doctor. Oh, you know, and then that somehow feeds into what they should or shouldn't do. And so we always used to encourage them. We're like, no, you know, come up with the craziest answers when people ask you that, you know, I'm going to be a squirrel collector. I'm going to be, you know, what have you, just to diffuse it. And then when the question that, you know, I said that you, I would ask them is like, what do you like now? What do you like to do? What are the things that bring you joy? What are the things that you get excited about? What part of school do you really like? Like those kinds of things, in the hope that you would sort of instill in them this idea, you know, that I've been able to find in my life, which is, you know, do something you love, because you will probably be the best at something you enjoy doing, you know, as opposed to, you know, whatever pocket people want to put you in. People always want to put you in a pocket.
So while I'm listening to this, someone has a family, maybe like, you know, a couple of kids, you know, a small family. What's something they can do? Let's just say low budget, high budget. Like if they want to go away for like, say, a week or two, what's some prep work, or how can they prepare to do that?
I'll start with, you can build, you know, people call it a staycation and then people downgrade it, right? Because they're like, oh, you didn't go anywhere. And I'm like, that's not true. I can tell you that we have done trips right in Toronto where we have either, we've decided what our budget was going to be. We've decided like, okay, we're going to stay. Are we staying at a hotel or are we staying home? Like, what's the way to make this happen? And you can do it for a couple nights. You can stay in a hotel that you can afford, harder in Toronto these days, but maybe something on the outskirts. We've gone to Prince Edward County for a couple of days. That's only 2.5 hours from here. There are beaches. There are farm stands. You can cook for yourself in a self-contained apartment, cottage rental. You know, there are ways you can do that. Camping, I am not a camper, so I can't pretend, but camping for sure. I'm a glamper. Which adds a little bit to it if you're going to glam. But if you're a camper, you can get campsites for like dollars, minimal dollars to rent a campsite with your own tent. And you can absolutely do that if that's the kind of vacation you want. If you are looking for, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, travel can be expensive and increasingly so over the last little while. And so it is, if you are thinking about big trips, you know, our year around the world, you know, I rented out my house, we sold a car. My husband was on a prepaid sabbatical. So that meant he was earning even though we weren't home, right? I'm a travel writer. So I was writing even though I wasn't home. I was working from the road. So it's not that we had some flush amount of cash that we just did on this thing. And it took us, I would say it took us probably about 10 years to pay off all of that trip, to get ourselves back to where we were before we left, crashed in RESPs. Like we really took a risk.
And that risk totally paid off. I want to thank Heather for sharing her story with me and sharing with us that you can live out your travel dreams with your kids. Thanks for being on the show, Heather.
Thank you. I'm glad. I always try to spread the gospel of travel. So I'm glad that I hope more people realize that it's available to them and they can make something of it.
Thanks for joining me for the latest episode of Words of Michelle, the podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, I'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on Apple Podcasts. Just a reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions or would like to provide feedback, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can email me at michelle@wordsofmichelle.com. You can also email me if you have inquiries regarding sponsoring the show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, bye.